Hey everyone, thank you for listening to another episode of Spoiler Force Podcast. You can find all episodes on any podcasting platform like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and watch episodes on YouTube. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and make sure to follow Spoiler Force on all social media platforms at Spoiler Force Podcast.
This is Skyler McIntosh, voice of Yui from Hell's Paradise, and you're watching Spoiler Force.
All right, so this is episode 162 of Spoiler Force Podcast. My name is Ricky, and thank you for tuning in. This week's guest is someone I'm extremely excited to have on the show. I will talk about how I got her on the show momentarily, but let me just bring my guest here. She has been on tons of anime, like One Piece, Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, the latest anime right now, the Hell's Paradise. She's the voice of Yui. So let me just bring my guest here, Skyler McIntosh. Thank you so much for doing this today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, like I said in the intro, I wanted to talk about like how I was able to get you on the show here, because this is the first time I actually like just DM'd someone on Twitter. And usually when I do that with like other potential guests, I know for sure there's like no reply back, or like I'm pretty sure they won't ever see it because of other things that they do. But you replied pretty quickly, and that surprised me. That really like took me off guard. I'm like, whoa, is this really like, is she really replying back? Because I you know, like I said, usually with other guests, like they don't ever even see it. So again, thank you for just making time to do this. Sure. So, you know, I guess, you know, just for starters, for the fans and followers who may not know you, you know, Skyler, how did you get into the industry of just voice acting and animation?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'd say primarily I knew that I wanted to be an actor from pretty young, probably about 11, 12 years old. But I grew up on anime. So it was just kind of always a pipe dream of being able to voice an anime. But I went to school for training, theater training, film training. My college degree is in theater with an emphasis in performance. And then in, I think 2014, I just graduated from college the year before. And I had a friend who had got into working with Funimation at the time, now Crunchyroll. And that was back when they were doing open call auditions. So I Googled like crazy and figured out how to get on their open call list. Heard nothing. I didn't have a voice reel. I didn't really have a lot of voiceover training. I really was just relying on my film and theater background and knowledge of the nuance of anime, and submitted my resume and my film demo reel. And 6 months later, they had open call auditions for, it was A Certain Magical Index season 2. And luckily they just had a ton of girl roles. And so I went in for that, and Jerry cast me as my first role. I was Sarai Fukuyose in that. And that just kind of opened the door for the rest of my Funimation Crunchyroll career.
Did you do anything else besides that? Aside from like voice acting, did you do like any, I guess, commercial reels or anything like that as well? I know like a lot of actors, you know, they do like a lot of like stage work or musical work, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Did you do that as well?
Yeah, I don't have, really, voiceover is pretty much exclusively anime dubbing for me, but definitely I work in film, TV, commercial. I don't do theater as much anymore, but still very much work and film and commercial.
Yeah, because I looked at your IMDb and I saw that you did some like live action stuff as well, or like live recordings and stuff like that. So I guess from your experience, you know, how is that like compared to just doing voiceover work in the booth? You know, I've spoken with, you know, several actors already who gave like their experience, and usually it sounds the same, but I guess for you, Skyler, how is that? Do you find it a little bit, I guess, is it more challenging for you? Is it easier for you when you go like on camera to off camera?
I feel like I trust myself more in on-camera acting. Voiceover, they're still always fighting kind of that like 11-year-old in me that's like, what are you even doing in here? And also dubbing, it's so different because you come in and, I mean, it's having to, you know, fit with the flaps that are already there. They're not reanimating it. You don't have as much creative liberty. They're having to translate it into English and have it fit that. And you need to make it fit inflection-wise. So there's just a lot of technical things to juggle while you're doing it. I think it's thrilling. I am excited every time I get to go into the booth, but I'd say I'm definitely a lot more comfortable in traditional on-camera acting. That's also where my training is. So.
Now, did you, I guess, was it on-camera work that you did on first then before you went over to voiceover?
Yes. So I did theater, and then I started, I guess when I was like 14, I started doing on-camera classes. And then I went through high school, and then in college, I went to college for theater with a performance emphasis. So that was predominantly theater training, Meisner training with a little bit of film training. And then after college, went into studying with a film studio. So.
Now, when you're voicing anime characters and trying to match the flaps, now I know that, you know, it's already done prior already, and then like you only read what's given to you. It's not like you're watching the whole series or trying to learn what the scene is, because it's already just in that moment. So looking at you, like the way how you did your, I guess just coming up from the beginnings of your voice acting career to now, you had like a lot of like, I guess you could say like additional voices and stuff like that, background characters and stuff like that, you know, building up that resume, did you just take whatever was given to you, or was there something that you saw that you liked in these shows? You know, how was that like?
Yeah, it's pretty much, I mean, really for me, it's been building relationships with directors, and then they continuously have called me in to work on things either as characters that they knew I would be a good fit for, or to come in and do additional voices. Additional voices are a great way to be able to go in and work in front of other directors that you don't typically have a lot of time with in the booth. But it pretty much has just been getting a text or email from Tara and saying, hey, are you available for this? And, you know, doing that. And then they, we have auditions and stuff that we still have to do throughout there. But a lot of it has really just been working with directors that know pretty much what they're signing up for with me, and if they see a character and it makes sense for me, then they'll reach out.
Did you practice like a lot of Walla at all? Because that's something I learned this year too. Like Ben Balmaceda, he was on my show too, and we talked about Walla, just how you guys like they would improvise lines and stuff like that in the booth, and then kind of just send that out to like Crunchyroll or Funimation, and they just like, you know, placed them in the show. So you know, a lot of actors now, like I noticed that they're doing that just to, like you said, just to kind of get like some roles in or get some work in. You know, was that something that you, I guess, dealt with at all?
I definitely have had my fair share of Walla or additional voices coming in, but it hasn't ever been specifically seeking out. It's just they call in groups. Sometimes they need all girls, or they know they're going to need to bring in girls that can do X range of voices, or they're going to bring in girls and guys. Because before, sometimes we would just all go in a little booth together, and it's basically, hey, you are in a market scene, so, you know, give us some variation. A couple of you guys can be some kids, maybe some older ones, maybe someone's, you know, arguing about something, and then you just improv. And it's fun because sometimes, you know, you can hear a little bit of what someone else is saying next to you, and you kind of play off of that. But it truly is just improv and playing, and you have a lot more liberty because a lot of it won't really be understood. It's, you know, it can be so quiet in the background, it's hardly there, or it's so on top of each other that, you know, as long as the lines reasonably make sense, then, you know, have at it. So I'd say that Walla Work is definitely a fun place to come in and experiment, try out new voices, try new things, test yourself, just kind of a place to play, since, you know, there's just a lot of grace with it. It usually doesn't have to fit into anything. There's a whole lot of assumed characters that may not even be on screen when you hear Walla.
Yeah, usually it's always just about the environment of what you're like being the background for. Like you can't like say a lot of fantasy stuff. It's like if it's like a school setting, you know, anime or vice versa, you know.
Oh, there's lots of school Walla. Lots of stuff about doing homework or being late for class or forgetting to study. The scary ones are fun too, where it's lots of freaking out or running around or monsters. I mean, you know how anime is. So
have you done any like monster voices at all?
Monster voices, not really. I mean, screaming for sure. And then, so what was it? Inda in, oh my goodness, come back to me. I keep thinking Chainsaw Man, but it wasn't Chainsaw Man. It was the guy that had the gun for a head. It'll come back to me in a minute. But that one, so a lot of times she becomes kind of like a type of monster. And so they will do like a voice effect on it afterwards. But as far as like super character-y, monster-y, creature-y, I haven't really done a lot of that.
I've seen that you've done like a lot of, younger female characters, you know, trying to get your voice into that range. Is that something that was, I guess, easier for you, or did you have to work on that?
I feel like I work in a pretty defined little area. I mean, you have some actors that are very, whether it's voiceover or film or commercial, are very character-y. They have a super wide range. They transform. I feel like my voice stays in a pretty basic range. It can be higher or lower depending on how old my character is, but generally, just by the sound of it, by the pitch of it, I sound younger. I sound like my voice never dropped or went through, and you know, so I just sound super young still. So it's not very hard to reach for that and to bring that in. And so that's why I typically am voicing girls that are, you know, 5 to 17 usually. So also in anime, I mean, everyone is like a teenager, but
right.
Teenager, yeah, that, or older, and I don't sound authentic older. I've tried, but it's pretty awkward.
I mean, I guess like there's no like shortage of those kind of characters for your voice then, you know, because there's so many younger characters in the anime. It's just like hearing like your voice, or like hearing someone like Emmy Lo, who naturally has like a younger sounding voice, it's just like, I guess I don't want to say you guys get typecasted, but those are the kind of characters directors would choose you for versus like experimenting you with like, let's say like a more like an aggressive character, or like a mm-hmm. like a, I guess, what's a good like Hanji from Attack on Titan, you know, someone with mm-hmm. a more assertive voice. But you know, I guess we can kind of dig into some of the characters that you voice that are like younger, you know, like one of my favorites is Chloe from Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid. Mm-hmm. You know, that was something that I just did like a review anime episode for that, so that'll be out pretty soon too. So I can't, like, whenever I hear like the voices for that show, it just surprises me, like, to see how talented everyone in that cast is. And you know, Skylar, you get bragging rights because you're the first cast member of that show that's on the podcast. I've been like hunting for Kobayashi members on my show for so long, and it's been difficult to get some of the cast members like to do interviews and stuff, so thank you for that as well. But you know, how did you get that voice for Chloe? You know, you know, even though she's only in like what, 2 episodes, like she played such a, you know, fun and comedic role in that show.
She's so fun. Yeah, that was another one of getting called in. I had been working on Audrey Fioretta before, and got called in again, the same director after, who had taken over for season 2. So this was coming back. I started recording for season 2 of that like 10 days after I had my son. Like gave birth to him. And so, and luckily that one was recording from in a home closet before they'd fully set up at the new studio. But then like, you know, the show came up and a new character came up. And so I just got called in by that same director to come in and play her. And she's so fun. I mean, kids are always great because their energy is crazy and everything is magical and wondrous and playful. And as you've mentioned, like the cast is stellar. I was very humbled to be able to come in and come on a show like that does have such big names on it. It's always fun to go play in the same sandbox as them.
Were you familiar with that show at all, or you just kind of went?
I hadn't watched it, but I was familiar with it as far as context or seeing everyone talk about it. I'd seen plenty of little clips from it, but I don't think I had. If I had, I think I've maybe seen a few episodes, but I hadn't seen very many of them. I'm pretty much an all or nothing. Like I'm either binging anime or I'm not touching it for a minute. So I go back and forth. There is no in between.
Yeah, because Miss Kobayashi has like a very niche fan base, like mm-hmm. very much like, I guess you could say, like the JoJo fandom. Like, you know, who is like a big part of that group. And, you know, like I said, Miss Kobayashi is one of my favorite shows because of, I guess, just how it is generally. Like, it's so different from all the shonen stuff. And, you know, it's very slice of life and very comedic. Yes. So like that took me by surprise, and which is why like I love the show so much. But you know, your character in there, even though she was in there for a limited time, you know, I guess you got this, your character spent a lot of time with Jade's character, with Kana. So mm-hmm. you know, were you able to like, I guess, see her play that role as well, or were you guys recording separately?
No, it's always separate. Yeah. So there were a lot of time. I mean, sometimes you'll go in and the voice is already there, or there are a lot of times I know for a lot of my sessions, I feel like I go in and the other voices aren't there yet. So it's always really cool, like when it actually does air, to come out and hear all the voices come together. And sometimes you may have one or two to work off of when you're in the studio. It just depends on what order they've called everyone in to come in and record. So it can be, very, I don't want to say daunting. I'm trying to think of the right word for it. It's just very strange. Ignore my cat. I am so sorry. That's Ninja. It can be very strange because you go in and then you preview it basically a clip at a time in Japanese. And then you come in and it's like, all right, beep, beep, beep. You go in with yours and you may have nothing else to work off of other than what you've just seen in the Japanese. So.
So was there any challenges then, like, I guess for certain characters that you've done, like, I guess, you know, now that you bring that up, trying not to emulate too much of them, of the Seiyus as well? I know you want to put in your own, like, your own voice in these characters too, but I guess are there times where you feel like it's difficult trying to voice these characters after hearing the Seiyu do it? Like, instead of, like, not trying to exactly, like, you know, copy and paste them, you know?
Sure.
You know what I'm saying, though? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes and no. It just kind of also depends. A lot of it will come down to kind of what the director's style is too. Like, maybe it's coming in and doing something similar, or what worked in the Japanese is not working well in the English, and so we have to modify on the spot, or whatever's in the script, the words aren't fitting right, and we have to change it on the spot too. But that's where I rely really heavily on working with some really awesome directors that come in. They're like, well, why don't you try it this way? Or, like, maybe take that and split the difference between here and here. So there's a lot of, I'd say, like, background work that goes on there, you know, that you don't see behind the scenes that helps get it to, from that Japanese to that English translation. There have definitely been roles that I've listened to and then been very intimidated to come to the booth and try and do. But I mean, it's so fast paced. Like, again, you don't get a script to study beforehand. Sometimes you don't even know, like, what you're going to be recording when you're called in, or what character you're going to be playing in a show. So if I have the opportunity, if I know at least what show I'm working on, then I'll try to watch, if it's even available, I'll try to preview it, so I at least have kind of an expectation. If I know it's going to be a lot of screaming, or if I know it's going to be in a certain intensity or emotional place, I try to prep for that. But it's so fly by the seat of your pants. You pretty much just have to, like, put all your insecurities down and say, okay, 1, 2, 3, here we go. And just be honest and give it your best in this crazy, you know, 1 out of 100 state land in anime.
How do you, I guess, prepare for that, then, knowing that there are characters that may require, like, a lot of screaming, or like a lot more of an emotional range? Is that something you kind of practice at home, like, I guess, just like through vocal training, or just, you know, what, I guess, how do you prep for that?
So I think it, for me, it's just kind of getting into, I guess, the right headspace is maybe a way to word it. So for sure, it's vocal warming up in the car, especially for higher characters, like higher pitch characters, younger characters, ones that are high energy that I know are really over the top. So it's just getting your voice ready to help save your vocal cords, and also so it's not going to crack too much when you do go in there and try to bust out, you know, 3 octaves higher than, like, you really speak in real life. And then for things that are emotionally intense, sometimes you don't know. You walk in there and it's like, okay, this is what we're doing. And you just kind of have to accept it and embrace it and go with it. If I know it is going to be something specifically particularly hard, I just rely back on my film and theater training of just kind of accepting for what it is. I try really hard not to overthink it. I think that's what's great about anime dubbing, is that you don't get a lot of opportunity to overthink. It's literally a preview it, and then you hear 3 beeps and it's your turn to go, and you just do it. And I think that calls a lot on subconscious, on trusting yourself, on trusting your instrument, and just putting your heart into it and accepting that these are the given circumstances, and don't question it, just dive on in. So
it's good. It's a good thing you brought that up too, because there was one role you did in My Hero Academia. I believe it was Hana Shimura, where, you know, I guess that emotional scene there, playing that character and seeing what happens to her, and, you know, just I guess in a way you did scream in that scene too, because of what happens to her in the show. You know, how did you prep for that? Was it the same thing as well? Seeing how that scene was happening, like, did you have to think about, like, oh man, this is what I need to do to match that pace or match that voice, you know? Or again, was it just based on
the scream? Was kind of hard. I felt like, yeah. I think it's been a minute since we recorded that, but it was, my voice kept cutting out, or it wasn't going long enough. So the intensity of that scream, for whatever reason, that day was a little hard. I think, like, younger version, little brother had already, like, voice was already in there. And I can't think of anybody's name or anything right now. But she broke my heart listening to her, come in and voice that. And just, I don't think I actually got, I can't remember if I had a chance to really prep for it or not. But that was working, I think, with Colleen as the director on that. And she was, again, great on, like, here's where it is, super sad, and, you know, you rely heavily on your directors to kind of talk you into that space as well. Just a combination of that. But I mean, it was just kind of a dive on in. So,
you know, when you do, like, it seems like a lot of the I guess the voiceovers that you've done, it's more like, I don't want to say so much on the fly, but you know, when you do get time to prep for your character, or like have a character that's in this series for a while, you know, is there anything that you do to kind of like get into that character's headspace? You know, do you go and read the manga at all, or do you go back?
I do as much research as I can find. So I internet stalk characters. I go all over. I do try to figure out what's going on. If there's anything about a light novel, I look for spoilers. I look for everything if I have the chance to prep beforehand, just to see. I mean, part of it is just curiosity, and part of it too is just, you know, kind of have an idea of what's coming. Sometimes I check, like, we do a lot of simulcasts now, so we don't always know how far it's going to go or what they're going to end up doing when it's, you know, released from Japan and then it comes out here and we get a couple of weeks to come out with a dub. But like, singing is just not my strong suit. I've tried, I've trained, I've put my heart and soul into it, and I'm not a strong singer. And it is that I started off with singing. Luckily it was like as a kid, so there was a little bit of grace there. I swear I'm tone deaf or something, but I will check for things like that so I can prep as much as humanly possible and just give it my best. I do not lie to directors that I'm not a strong singer. Do not cast me in those roles. But I mean, you can only prep so much. Sometimes it's playing certain things or experimenting with different voices or just kind of tasting, I guess, how different lines feel in your mouth, trying it out that way. But at the end of the day, I just feel like the nature of it, it's not coming in with a full scene of working back and forth with other actors that you have to work off of. There's just so much technical that goes into it that you just, you know, it's just a lot of accepting, trusting, and free falling in it. And then working with your team, your engineer and your director save your butt a lot. Like, they're magic.
I know that a lot of directors tend to not let their actors or like let their cast read ahead, or like, you know, I think it was My Hero as well. Like some other, the more mainstream stuff, sometimes like directors won't let them read ahead just because they want them to have like more authentic. Yeah. Like to voice the characters authentically versus like how it's interpreted, I guess, or how the actors interpret them, mm-hmm. You know? So I guess for you, was there any character like that where your director told you like, you know, don't look and study them, or, you know,
No, none of that. I never really had. I mean, I can understand with something like My Hero, absolutely why. But no, I never really had any of those where they were like, don't read ahead or don't watch ahead. Otherwise I would come in and they'll give you a recap as they come in. I mean, these directors and engineers, like, they have to live in these shows and watch them multiple times, be very familiar with them, look for pronunciations for everything to know what's coming too. And then sometimes they're having to cast, you know, as they're going through the series, characters just keep popping up. So they're constantly having to keep this awareness, this eye out. But yeah, I don't think I ever had anyone tell me that I couldn't go ahead or look into anything. So
has there been any other, like, besides from voice acting, has there been any other, I guess, roles you've done in the animation industry? Have you done like any writing or ADR like that?
No, I really haven't done a lot on the writing or ADR side. I know I've dubbed some of like the live action that comes through a little bit. Those are not the same as coming in for the animation, but no, I know that, I mean, a lot of my friends, I've seen them, you know, work their way up and they're huge now. Like, they're big name actors. They do directing, they do writing, they do all of it. And that's awesome for them. I have just been on the voice side. So
is that something that would like interest you at all? Like, I guess in the future, if you ever want to do something like that, or like,
I think it sounds really interesting. I'd be really curious to kind of peek behind the curtain and watch the process of it all. Again, coming from it, you know, I feel like most of us that come in here are anime fans. You know, there are some of us that aren't, but I know, like, the first time really coming into this, just, you know, seeing, putting faces to voices I'd heard, you know, whether they're my peers or not, for several years was very humbling and exciting. So I think any way to be a part of it, any way to, you know, see behind the curtain there, it's still kind of that childhood dream.
Yeah, I know that with doing, like, working behind, like, in production and like not doing the acting stuff, like, there's some actors that I've spoken to that, you know, that do work behind the scenes and stuff like that, and they it is very different, you know, versus just going into the booth and just using your voice to make these characters come to life. But, you know, sometimes there are people who have to like write the script or like have to study the anime just to make sure the words match the flaps and all that. And it's a whole different like side of just the animation industry as well, just to see how much work gets put into the shows that we all love. If you want to start your own podcast like Spoiler Force, then sign up with Buzzsprout. Buzzsprout has helped hundreds of thousands of users like me to begin their podcasting journey. With easy-to-use tools, you can effectively get your podcast onto different platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, iHeartRadio, and more. You can view your stats, create audio clips, and even have your own podcasting website. Buzzsprout offers ideas, tips, tricks, and tutorials to help you improve your podcast. Follow the link below, and once you sign up, you'll get a $20 Amazon gift card. This will let Buzzsprout know that I sent you and will also support Spoiler Force Podcast. If you want a simpler way to record both video and audio for your podcast, then sign up with StreamYard. StreamYard is the perfect program to create podcasts, host live streams, and even do video calls. There are many tools that can help you create and design your own personal studio. You can screen share, read live comments, and stream to different destinations like Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. You can also download your video and audio once you're done with your recording session. Follow the link below, and once you sign up with the basic or pro plan, you'll earn a $10 credit to use for StreamYard. Happy podcasting. Speaking of some of these shows, though, I know you recently got cast as Yui for Hell's Paradise, which is another hot anime that's coming out right now. I know that the dub just released not too long ago. I don't know how many. I think there's like two episodes out so far.
Yeah, I think the third dubbed episode will come out on Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, so how did you get that voice for Yui?
That was Mike calling me in. So he was the original one to cast me in Ari Pirueta. And One Piece, a lot of, Mike has been super generous to me with roles, but yeah, he called me in for that and I'm eternally grateful. Yeah, I feel like it was just for a while, it was kind of working in One Piece and, you know, I think Boogie Pop and others, he cast me in as well. And it was just kind of working together on different things and kind of testing here and there. And then he started giving me these larger roles and, you know, just kind of working your way up and building that repertoire. And yeah, I mean, got the call in. As soon as I heard that I was coming in to work on this show, I didn't know what character. So I started watching the whole first episode and I'm watching these characters. And I'm like, nope. I know my voice range. I'm not Sakiri by any chance. And then I see Yui come out and I'm like, okay. I think I know now. So
did he just call you then, or did you do like an audition process at all?
This is one that I got called in for.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I know that even sometimes like when directors do call their actors, I know that sometimes there has to be like, you know, a audition process or at least some sort of testing that goes in there. So it's really cool to hear that, you know, when directors know like, oh, you know, this person matches this character, like just give them that role or let them voice that role. Have you, I guess, with this anime now coming out, I know that the manga is like several years older than what it is in the anime series. So have you read the manga at all for Hell's Paradise?
I haven't. I've done a lot of research on it, but I haven't actually read the manga yet. So, but I do watch and try to preview as much as I can before I go into record.
So how did you, I guess, meet most of the directors that you know? Was it just through work then, or did you meet them outside of the industry?
No, it's all been in the studio, and it's either been through auditions, like maybe I didn't book from the thing that I auditioned for, but they heard me and remember my voice, and they kind of keep a bank, and then they'll try me out in different characters here and there, or smaller roles, and just kind of see, I guess, how we work together. I mean, it goes back to that wall of work again, or the bit roles coming in again. Those are great ways to be able to get in front of other directors you haven't spent a lot of time with. Because I'd say very heavily, there are three main directors that I spend most of my time working with. And they know what to expect if they call me in, and they know my very like specific range that I'm in, and they see a character that works, and I'm very, very fortunate that they think of me. So,
yeah, because I know some of these actors, like they'll meet them at like conventions and stuff for like the first time.
I actually haven't been to a convention before. I'm dying to go, but I haven't been yet.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So that is something that you should definitely do, especially with the voices that you have now, like the in your mm-hmm. resume. You should definitely try doing that, because I know that, like I said before, like some of these actors that I've spoken with, you know, they met some of these directors before just at conventions, not knowing that they'll be working with them in the future, you know. So yeah. I think that's a really cool way to get roles too, just not knowing that, you know, I've seen them at a convention or seen them at a convention and eventually got to work with them, you know, with an anime series. But I guess now that we're on the topics of conventions, you know, you said you've never been to one. So like, you've never been to one as a guest or just like an attendee?
No, I haven't at all as either. I'd love to go one day, and I don't know what's held me back other than, I'm not sure what's held me back, but no, I mean, I would love to go like as a fan to experience. I would love to go as a guest. I hear there are tons and tons of fun, but yeah, I have not been to one yet.
Yeah, you should definitely go, especially being in the anime industry. I know that in Texas here, there's tons of like small conventions almost every weekend. And, you know, even with the big ones, like with Anime Frontier or Akon, or even like with the Comic-Con stuff, like Fan Expo Dallas, you know, there's tons of conventions and different genres and stuff like that. So, you know, depending on where you live, like you could easily find one. I know that there's going to be quite a few, like especially in the summertime. It's going to be very busy, but I highly recommend that you go to one just to experience it, you know, just get like a one day pass for you and your family and just like see how things are set up there. Cause I know that, again, a lot of the guests that I was able to get on my show, I met them at cons and not even knowing that they're going to be at cons. Like I just see them at the table one day and I'm like, hey, weren't you on the show? And then like, you know, it's really cool to meet the guest at a con as well.
Yeah. That sounds fun.
So since you haven't gone, you know, was there, I guess, would you like to go to like a con that's like out of state at all? You know, like besides from like just,
I think
Texas?
Any of them would be fun. It's just finding the opportunity and signing up and going. I mean, I have a son now, so that makes everything a little bit, I don't want to say more challenging, but it's just more to maneuver around.
Now, was that, I guess, for you then having your child and, you know, during like the COVID times, you know, was that difficult for you as well, trying to set up your own booth at home and all of that?
It was so frustrating for a little bit. I had moved, I'd been downstairs in a closet working, and then I moved it upstairs to a different closet. We couldn't figure out what was going wrong with my setup. Like everything was right. And there was just this echo we couldn't get rid of. And it turned out it was, I guess where I was working, the roof line came down, so it angled and it was reverberating back. So I had to create all these blankets and this mess behind me to try and get it. And I had like my mic, like in all these clothes. It was just such a hot mess of a setup, but it worked. I very much prefer going into studio. It's so much fun. It's like an adult playground there.
You don't have like a home studio then?
Not anymore. So we moved and now, there's not a very cohesive space in our new place. And there's a lot of hard edges. It's new construction. There's a lot of hardwood. So everything would take a lot of padding and working to try and create a space for it to make sense.
Yeah. I know that during those times, it was like a lot of actors just took advantage of, I guess, what they could at home. And even for me, podcasting, like I've had to really like, figure out how I can conduct interviews without trying to like travel too much. Cause I know that, you know, even now, like what I'm doing now, it's all virtual still. And hopefully like I'm trying to hopefully get something going when it's for like in person, but you know, what I'm doing now works at the moment.
Yeah.
So, but for actors, I know that again, like for actors, like they all, it's either some like made their own booths or some didn't, or like some even like took advantage of that and did like Twitch streaming and like played games online. You know, was that something that I guess interested you at all, like doing all that?
I haven't done a lot of that. I know I feel so like foreign in the world sometimes, but I haven't done a lot of online gaming. I do like a lot of reading, or I'll do audiobooks so I can listen to that while I'm driving for work or while I'm out running or cleaning. It's kind of a way to be productive and creatively engaged at the same time. But I never really got into a whole lot of computer games. Gaming didn't go much past like N64 for me. So I got too frustrated with like the disconnect and like my hand dexterity.
I mean, there's also like, you know, tons of other ideas for content, like, you know, like TikToks, or like even trying to start your own podcast, or even I guess like even, you know, reading books aloud. There's like tons of
audiobooks. There's lots. I mean, it's, I'd say, I guess life has just been very busy. I had a lot of crazy life changes in, I mean, really 2020 to 2023 have been a ton of life changes. Like, it's just everything you can throw in at once. Why not? Good, bad, ugly, all of it. So it's been a lot of just continuing training, exploring, writing a little bit, classes, workshops, moving. I work as a realtor also, in addition to film, TV, commercial, and voiceover acting. And then now as a parent, as a wife, I've been a triathlete, so I'm all over the place.
So how I guess balancing all of that out, it seems like there's, you have a lot on your plate, you know, but I guess was that something you just naturally just learned to balance out on your own then? Or was it like,
I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea how to make anything work. I just pray to Jesus every day to make it happen. Make me better every day. Help me do better tomorrow. Like, that is my status in life.
Yeah, I had no idea you were a triathlete.
I'm not in very good shape right now, but I found out I was pregnant the day after I did my second Ironman. I was like, oh wow. Well, that explains a lot. So.
was that something you've done since you were young? Like just being off, like doing sports and all that stuff? Or you just picked it up one day?
No,
and like,
I grew up with water sports and like playing soccer some for fun, but I'm not talented in soccer at all. But no, it was something I got into when I was, I think, around 25. It just kind of naturally, through friends and circles, I just suddenly found myself in that circle. And that was my social time when I was trying to make new friends, and just, it felt good and it was fun. I had the time and the money to play in that sport. And so that's what I did.
Did you do it all here in Texas then? Just like doing all
of those? Yeah. It's all, okay. Well, so the last, like big race I done was in Oklahoma, but most of it has been in Texas.
Yeah, I've never done any of that stuff. Like I did some sports when I was younger, but I've had friends who've done like Ironmans and stuff like that. And I got to see their pictures where they, you know, like climbed the rope over the wall, or like, I guess.
Oh, like in Spartans. In
the
mud.
Yeah. Like the Spartan run stuff, you know?
Yeah. Spartans are a lot of fun. They're kind of like a big adult military playgrounds.
Yeah.
Obstacle courses.
So like I've seen that and it looks fun. It just, I didn't know like the amount of time to get prepped for like to stay in shape for that. Like one of my friends was like really into it, and I got to see his journey of like how he like got into shape for it, and then like even like his diet and all that stuff just to do that course. You know, for you, was that something that was that difficult as well for you, like trying to maintain like the healthy lifestyle to do these courses and all that?
Yeah, well, for Spartan was a lot of fun. That was stuff that I did. Racing with a team. Triathlon definitely pushed me a lot more because I'm not really naturally an endurance athlete. I guess because it was like my social time and workout time combined into one, that I got so much of the benefit of like, oh, I'm hanging out with friends. And that made it really fun. So it was something I was really motivated to do. But it was not pretty during a lot of it. I mean, there is a lot of dry heaving. There's a lot of crying. There were months of like crying after every workout and like not keeping up. And then just suddenly like your legs come in on Amazon Prime and you can do it and you're keeping up. And it's pretty cool to, I think, discover that you can do something you didn't think would ever be possible. I know I have really bad asthma and allergies and eczema and all these crazy things. And just to realize like, you know, to do something I didn't really do as much growing up, that I could be an athlete. Like I can run marathons. I can do Ironman. I can, you know, do these things. And it's not just for this select special group of people that are just athletically talented. It's if you have the time, if you have, you know, if you can like walk, run a 5K, you can do it. Like with enough time, with the right like training plan, it's possible. But it definitely takes, it takes a lot of commitment. So
yeah, I spoke with I don't know if you know who Matt Hill is. He's another voice actor too, but he does the voice for Ed from Ed, Edd n Eddy. But outside of that, he's also like a he's also an athlete as well. He does like a lot of marathons, and when he was on my show, he was talking about like trying to swim the Pacific Oceans somehow.
Oh yeah,
which I don't know how he's gonna do that. Which it sounds crazy, but you know, for you being a triathlete, what was the most difficult part? Was it like the running? Was it the biking? Was it the swimming?
Probably the bike, getting in the bike shape, and mostly just so running a standalone marathon versus doing the marathon at the end of an Ironman are two different things. By the time you get to the run on a marathon or run on Ironman, it's like you've been in your head for 6 hours, 8 hours, however, or I guess more like 8 hours plus. And so now you can actually like talk to people. You're seeing people that you saw at the beginning of the race and you're like, look, we made it. We're still here. There's snacks. And so just the energy, you can walk, run it. It's very different, but the bike I had to get back on. I hadn't really been on a bike since I was like 13. So getting back into cycling, learning to ride an aero, kind of the fear of handling the speeds, of building up that conditioning. It's for me, a lot of anxiety too, of if you get like a mechanical, if you crash, what happens? I've been really fortunate. I've only had a couple of kind of bad crashes. So only one of them I ended up in the ER for, but I didn't even really need to be there. We just had to make sure nothing was broken. But I think there's just more anxiety with that. It's like, I know I'm not spectacular in, like I'm not fast, but I'm comfortable in water and strong enough to get through it in the time frame. So I'm like, I'm a mermaid. It's fine. Everything's going to be fine. And then you get to the bike and you're just like, don't crash, don't crash, don't crash, don't get a flat, don't crash, don't crash. And then you get to the run and it's snacks and friendship and magic. So
yeah, I'm terrible at riding bikes, and I'm only good enough to swim, like to survive. Like I cannot endurance swim or like try to like swim across something. I'll just float until I get there. So that's crazy to like train for that and to kind of like even prep for that. I guess was your husband like a part of that too? Was he into all that as well?
He's a very good Sherpa. So he like will come and support me. He would get me food after races. I lived off cupcakes and Whataburger for 3 days after my first Ironman. No shame. No, he's a very good supporter that way. He does not really have an interest in racing the longer distances with me. I got him to do a Spartan trifecta with me when we like first started dating. He was trying to slide into my DMs and all of that. And that was how we really got together, was through all of that. We had started dating in that. But
that's nice. Like to... Yeah. You know, if you want to date me, you got to do this with me too.
Yeah, he had done one before. He thought he was done with them. I was like, oh, you've done a trifecta, right? Oh, yeah. So he'll do shorter stuff sometimes, but the endurance game is not his favorite. So, but he's happy to support, and that's good enough for me.
So. You know, trying to, I guess, just like when you balance like the things you love outside of just your work life and social life and trying to do all this now, like I said earlier, it seems like there's a lot on your plate trying to do all this. So, you know, was there times where you felt like you had to choose one over the other, you know, like when it comes
to like now I don't do nearly as much training and I miss it, and there'll be a time for it to come back again. And you know, it's finding your limits. I mean, sometimes it's finding those limits because you don't know, you know, what's your breaking point. Well, let's go on an adventure and find out. And then you find out, and then you just prioritize based on where you are in life. Sometimes it's having to focus more on work because you have to work on, you know, finances. Sometimes it's on family because of where they're at. Sometimes it is back into fitness and your own health to find yourself or, you know, work through things, to work through health issues. So I feel like it's just kind of finding out what needs your attention now and then making it fit where it can, and deciding, you know, if something doesn't fit right now, I don't feel like you have to ever say goodbye to something forever. It's just a break from it until it makes sense again in your life.
Yeah, that's how I am too, like with my podcast and like even with just my regular 9-to-5, or, you know, when it comes to like things that I want to do, it's hard to kind of like pursue certain like career paths or trying to, you know, choose one over the other, because you need one to, you know, live off of. You can't just like do the stuff you love and not get paid for it. But then there's also like passion projects and stuff like that you want to do as well. And to keep yourself like mentally happy and all that stuff. So it's, it, in a way, it is, you know, very difficult at times to kind of just choose what you want to do. But it's pretty cool to see how much stuff you've done. And like I said, I did not expect that from you. Did not know any of that. So it's cool to kind of just hear that firsthand. And, you know, aside from like all the acting talk as well, because, you know, a lot of the actors I do speak with, you know, it's always kind of just geared towards that versus like trying to get to know what else they've done outside of that. So, you know, that's really cool to see that you did train that, and, you know, you still pursue that as well.
Thanks. Just like built me up. It feels good. Thank you.
No, it's really neat to hear that. And I think it's cool when you like talk about these subjects and have like fans or followers like hear that, and not just like, oh, you know, they're not just actors, or like they don't just do this, you know. It's now they if you ever go to a con or something like that, and people like meet you, and that's like another icebreaker as well, just to be able to, like, you know, to talk about your training methods or like talk about like the things that you've done outside of acting. Now, you know, I guess before we do wrap things up here, Skylar, I just want to say, you know, thank you so much for your time, and this was very fun just to get to know you and to hear your experience as well. I guess, you know, before we do end things here, one of my last few topics is like, you know, just was there any, I guess, projects that you want to work on, like besides the ones that you're on now? Like, are there any animes or even like maybe like a live TV show that you're kind of trying to gun for?
There is something that is out there, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it or not.
If so, not, I mean, if you have to be discreet, just like, I mean, I would prefer you not talk about it if it's like.
Yeah, there's a show I love. That I am excited about things with. So, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I you know, like, I guess, you know, when you do see like certain animes or like certain shows that are hot, you know, do you or your manager kind of like talk about that as well? Just like, you know, let's try to see if we can get this role here or a role in this show, or,
you know, not as much. It's generally so like they'll be auditions sometimes, and it's like, okay, here's your opportunity to come in for this. Sometimes there aren't auditions. Sometimes it's just getting called in. So it's seeing the auditions come through and putting yourself out there. And then if something's already airing, the audition for that is probably not there or won't be there until another season. And so then it's just, if it makes sense and going off of the relationships you have. So.
Yeah. So, we can leave that at that. I don't want to like pry anymore. Cause I know that because NDAs and all, so I do want to respect that as well. Cause I know that, you know, sometimes actors do want to talk about like certain roles or like certain projects that they're on, but they can't. So I don't want to be one of those people and get you guys in trouble, you know, cause that's the last thing I want to do. But again, Skylar, thank you so much for your time. This was really fun just to get to know you and talk about your career and all that stuff as well. You know, for fans and followers who do want to follow you or, you know, find you on social media, how can I do that?
So Twitter, pretty much all my handles are about the same. Like if you look at Skylar McIntosh for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, that's pretty much where I'm at. So yeah, but thank you again for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Yeah. And I'll have all those, the links and stuff that, and all that in the show notes and description of the podcast or on YouTube, wherever you watch or listen to this as well. And again, this was really fun. So, you know, if you ever want to come back on the show again, Skylar, I'd love to have you back on just to talk about like pretty much anything really. So, but it was fun. Again, it was fun getting to know you. Hopefully I get to see you at a con in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I wish something but the best for you. So again, make sure you like, share, and subscribe to Spoiler Force. Make sure you follow Skylar on her socials as well. And yeah, this is episode 162. Thank you guys so much and have a great day.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to give a review and rate Spoiler Force Podcast. If you want to get all Spoiler Force updates or even peeks at behind the scenes, you can join the Spoiler Force Discord community. And if you'd like to show support, give tips, recommendations, sponsorships, or any collaborations, you can email me at rickyvang92@gmail.com.